We are hot. Yes, yes, yes. What's going on, world? This is your man, Buddy Roaming, and we are back at it with another episode of the Yeah Buddy podcast. And this episode is brought to you by the Comedy Cash Cow competition. So if you want to see 25 comedians compete for their chance to win $1,000 and star in their own short film, you need to go to www.comedycashcow.com because tickets are available. The whole competition and event is going down May 25th in Vacaville, California at the Journey Theater, y'all. So go get those tickets right now ASAP. See these comedians battle it out for the title of the Cash Cow winner. We're going to have a whole bunch of entertainment people up in there. We're going to have some agents, some film commissioners, people from iHeartMedia. It's going to be a real dope networking event. So y'all please go out and support it. And let's get into this episode, y'all. Like I said, this is the Yeah Buddy podcast. And just like every single episode, I always try to bring some of my friends in the entertainment business, give us a chance to chop it up, catch up, see what we've been going on, what we got coming up. And this episode is like no other, y'all. This episode we have filmmaker, award-winning director, man, martial arts expert, man. This dude has movies, Tubi. He's really out here grinding, doing his thing, putting on for like the independent filmmakers up here in the Bay Area. He's a shit, Mr. Do-It-All when it comes to filmmaking. I want y'all to make it live and make it loud for my good friend, Mr. Robert Parham, right here at the Yeah Buddy podcast.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Great introduction.
Man, I try to do my research, y'all. I try to do my research and shit like that. You know? I try. Yeah, man. So I'm familiar with your work, but I think we got formally introduced at the Sacktown Movie Buff Film Fest.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I saw you there and we connected and we had a great time at that movie film festival.
Yeah, yeah. So what did, like just recap it, what did you take away from the film festival, from like the mixer all the way to, you know, your movie premiere?
Well, what I took away is that there's a lot of talent here in NorCal. Some of my friends call it Hollywood North.
Mm-hmm.
And people are underexposed here.
Yeah.
So that's what I took away from it. And they do some great work. The short films and the feature length films were just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah,
that's what I took away from
it. Yeah, there's definitely, like I said, people call it Hollywood North. There's definitely a film community up here where, like I said, the one thing that I really took away from, especially Friday night at the Mixer, was like, that's the first time I've seen so many different filmmakers just like all in just one area.
And right,
like, and there's like people like actors, directors, producers, you know, DPs, PAs, just everybody just over just like here in this one, with this one area. So just seeing everybody being able to put like their egos to the side.
Right. Just, no agenda, just mixing and having a good time.
Yeah. Mixing and mingling. And like, you're doing this, you're doing that. Okay, cool. You know, cause sometimes, especially up here, I feel like, I mean, you got to have an ego in this industry, but like sometimes it kind of gets in the way of people actually helping each other out and just getting to know people in general. So just being a part of that mixer was definitely a good experience. And like I said, I got to meet you and your whole entire production team.
No, so. Most of them, yeah, yeah,
most of them, yeah, yeah, yeah. You guys roll pretty deep, yeah, yeah. But then we segue into Sunday,
right,
where you had your movie was shown at the Sacktown Movie Buff Film Festival called Mad as Hell.
Did you like it?
I'll be completely honest with you. I had work that day, so I got it there just in time for the award ceremony.
So you missed the movie.
I missed.
Oh, man, I'm getting off.
Yeah. I did go back, watch the trailer. I was trying to watch it on Tubi on my way up here and stuff like that. But no, yeah, I do got to apologize for that. I did have that thing we call the JOB. That kind of gets in the way of pursuing this type of stuff. But no, I definitely did want to check it out though.
I want to shout out to the other filmmakers that had their feature shown as well.
Mm.
David John Foster had Centauri 29. He won a award for special video effects.
Mm.
And then Simp won Best Picture by Tremaine Hale.
Mm.
And Best Picture and Best Actress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Mad as Hell, we came in with Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Supporting Actress. So
yeah,
we did well.
No, yeah, y'all came away with some trophies. Like I said, that part I did see. You have won the Best Director.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. 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 So what did you take? Did you know you was going to win?
No.
Yeah?
No.
Did you have any type of like clue indication, like just loyal up to like, yeah, this is my award?
No. I let the work speak for itself.
Mm.
And if the community chooses to recognize it as such, then that's a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more about the work and the people involved in the work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look for awards or accolades, but I'm open to them if they yeah. come my way.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. So what was that feeling like? Like I said, first off, anybody that did see, it was premiering at like the IMAX as it was. So that's like just that big, big screen. I know it's premiered at like, it's been showed at film festivals at like Las Vegas and stuff like that. Were you, but like seeing it on like the IMAX, just like.
Yeah, I've never seen it at the IMAX. So the IMAX is six, the screen is six stories tall.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've never seen it at the IMAX. You know, I've seen it in other theaters and this thing. And so it was, I was like, wow, I was a little overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had other movies that we have made that played at the IMAX, but I never saw Mad as Hell there. So
okay,
it was pretty cool.
Nice. And so once when Kier had announced your name as the winner, best director, what was going through your mind?
Wow, you know, it was wow because it was a tight. The other two directors that were in competition were just as deserving.
Mm-hmm.
I was just flabbergasted, you know. Our movie collectively has won 34 awards throughout the world, and it just says a lot for the cast and crew and all of the hard work that they put in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, man. What goes into like making an independent film? Because it's not a studio. You know what I'm saying? There's no like it's literally like. You putting your all into it. What goes into, and we'll just talk about right now specifically for Mad as Hell, but I know you have a long resume of independent films that you have created.
Mm-hmm.
What goes into creating an independent film, starting from like just building the team? Because I know it's like you, because it's Mayhem Productions.
Right.
And it's so it's Eric James Myers and then you.
Mm-hmm.
How did y'all two get together, and then how did that, you know, blossom to like what it is now and what it's going to be?
I met Jim at a film festival that they had in Vacaville called the Vacaville International Film Festival.
Okay.
And we just connected from there.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to start making our own feature films.
Mm-hmm.
So we took his last name and my last name, May and Ham. Meet Mayhem Films.
Yeah.
And our first production was Jackson Bolt.
Okay.
We starred myself and Fred Williamson and R. Marcus Taylor and the hosts of other talent out here in Sacramento. And then we just moved on, and he would make a movie under the production. I would make a movie under the production. He would make a movie under, and it just grew from there. And when you do independent films, you attract a lot of talent behind the scenes that people just, you know, because people appear they don't have the opportunity to use their skills.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody had the opportunity to work on our film, whether you were a DP or a PA or a costume designer or makeup or hair or what have you.
Mm.
So, you know, we try to keep it as simple as possible because it's an independent film.
Yeah.
And we don't have big budgets like Hollywood and this, that, and the other. And make the best product we can.
Mm. Yeah, because I had Nakia Bryant on an episode previously. She had won best supporting actress at the SAGTOW Movie Buff Film Fest. And that's what she had talked about is how like your approach to filmmaking is you're very much like, you know, you're giving people work, giving people jobs, giving people opportunities, stuff like that. Where does that mentality come from?
One of my mentors when I moved out to California was Jim Kelly. And you might remember Jim Kelly from Black Belt Jones, opposite Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon. And he told me a long time ago to own your work, meaning that don't let a studio dictate what they want you to do. So I own my work. And when I own my work, I have the opportunity to share it with other people, whether it's for them working, whether it's people exploiting their or using their talent. It also keeps me sharp, you know, as a director, as an actor, et cetera, and so forth, as a producer. So that's where all of that comes from. That's where all it stems from. I hate to see, for example, the people, I call it the Black Renaissance era.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people call it Blaxploitation.
Mm.
A lot of those actors aren't working anymore.
Yeah.
And why is that? And the reason is when Hollywood is done with you, they just
they're done. It's an industry. It's like a factory line, man. And once you, once your time is up, man, they just,
just toss you to the side.
They're like, okay, now we need the new model.
Exactly. So when you're independent, you can make movies infinity, you know? So that's the route I chose to go.
Awesome. And then, so like I said, with being an independent filmmaker, not having the big budgets, not having to worry about the studios, the thing that you had just really just stuck to me is how you said Jim Kelly was like your mentor. Mm-hmm. I feel like as if you're going to be like, take that independent route, that is the most important thing that you do need is mentors. You need to have somebody who has accomplished the things that you want to accomplish in this industry, or maybe even not, you know, at least tried or, you know, able to learn from not only their success, but learn from their failures and be able to apply it to yourself. How important was it for you to have strong mentorship?
It's very important because, you know, when I first started in this business, I started out as an extra, you know, and so you're behind the scenes and you see how everything works and you're like, oh, I want to do that. Yeah. I want to learn how to do that. I fortunately was connected with Jim Kelly. And then, you know, I have my cousin, Gloria Hendry, great mentor. My other mentors, Fred Williamson, great mentor. Look at all that he's accomplished.
Yeah, yeah.
Art Camacho, great mentor. Ron Van Cleef, great mentor. Conan Lee, great mentor. And I have other mentors, but those are my people who will take the time to take, Robert, do this, don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch this. Say this, don't say that. You know, work with this story, work with this camera angle, et cetera, and so forth. So I learned from them. I stand on their shoulders.
That's definitely the, like, just having somebody who, because you can't find the mentor. Your mentor's got to find you. He's got to be able to look at you and say, okay, this dude, he just needs a little bit of, you know, experience, just somebody in his ear, and then he'll be cool. He'll be perfectly fine. I know, like, speak like doing extra work, man. Mm-hmm. It, like, extra work, I tell people, is like, it's like entry level work into this industry. You know, it's not something that you want to get tied to like forever. So just having somebody who could show you how to take you from being an extra to now having a job in the entertainment business, because that's really what it's about. It's not, I mean, being the movie star and stuff like that is such a small percentage of that. Mm-hmm. But then, like, when you look at, like, movies, and you attest to this, like, when you look at movies and you have, like, those end credits, like, the actors are, like, just this portion of the right. you know, of the credits. And then right. if you're talking about, like, the leads, the stars, it's like this. But then there's all these other jobs, and all those jobs is just basically opportunities for you to still be in the game, be in the mix, and just really just to pursue and keep chasing your dream and turn it from what we call as a dream to now a reality into right. a career.
Right.
And so how did you go from being started off as an extra to now doing, like, you still act, but you're also directing your own films?
Well, it was a lesson learned. I, like many other actors, auditioned for a role and I didn't get it. And then I saw the movie later on. I'm not going to, you know, name the movie or call anybody out.
Yeah.
And the acting was absolutely subpar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said to myself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy a camera and a computer, and I'm going to do this myself.
Yeah.
And that's right around the time Jim and I connected. So this was the jump of my acting foray into this business, real acting foray and directing, et cetera, so forth, into this business. So if you want something done, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened.
Yeah. Man, isn't that the worst experience ever, bro? Like, when you, like, you go to, and especially when you, like, you feel like you killed it, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I did it, man. Yeah, whoop, whoop. And then, like, you don't get the part of, you're like, all right, cool. Like, I understand that Noah's part of this business. But then, like, when you see the film that, or a commercial, whatever it be that you auditioned for, you see the person that they picked, and the person looks just like you.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you're more talented than this dude, and you be all like, fuck. Yeah, damn. You'd be like, I gotta do something. I gotta do something now.
That's one of those when one door closes, another door opens.
Yep.
Or if one door closes, you make your own doorway.
Yeah, you make your own doorway. Yeah, you kick in the walls or something, man. Because That's the what they also you got to understand is that when people call this the movie business, the film business, like the longest word there is business, and it's the most important thing. So you can't take those no's, you can't take those rejections personally. You got to take it. I say don't take it personal, take it professional.
Right.
Anytime somebody tells you no, says you're not right for this part, that you just got to take you just got to make your own part.
N-O means another opportunity.
Yep. Yep. So, next opportunity. Next opportunity. We going to keep this party rolling, man. So keep this party rolling. So now with you jumping into being director, first like short film experience, do you remember what that was like?
Let me see. I directed a short film called oh, gee whiz, what was the name of that short film?
I had it on your IMDb.
Yeah, you might have to look it up.
Because we was just talking about this. Me and Nakia, we was just talking about that the last podcast.
And Nakia was in it.
Yeah, she was in it. Yeah, it was like Buster. No, that was the second one.
I didn't direct that.
Oh, okay.
I was one of the producers on it. But it was called,
it wasn't The Difference, was it?
The Difference.
That's it.
So that was the first film I directed, short film. Ali D'Souza, who was my acting coach, we had a film club, and one of the things we took away from the film club was make your own short film.
Yeah.
So I wrote a script, my first script, so to speak, and we shot it, and it did well.
Mm.
It did pretty well. Yeah. There were some challenges because I really didn't know what I was doing, but I learned.
Yeah. You said Ali was your acting coach?
Yes, Ali.
Okay. I went to one of his movie premieres that he had at the, I think it was the Crest Theater, like a long, long time ago. And then I think that's the first time I became familiar with his work. But then I was just talking like it's crazy just like how small of a community this is,
and how
everybody is connected in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to have the opportunity to catch up with him at the Sacktown Movie Buff Film Festival was a dope experience. But like I said, just seeing how he played, like I said, it was his movie. You know, this big entity, but seeing just how much he's part of a team,
right?
You know, how important is it for you? The process of, or how important it is to have your team, build up your team, and what is your process of bringing people out? Because I noticed that you do work with a lot of the same people.
Well, I mean, don't recreate the wheel.
Mm.
If you look at Martin Scorsese, he's always working with Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Al Pacino. They're in countless movies together.
Mm.
If you look at, what's that actor's name? Adam Sandler. He's
yeah.
got the same people in his movie.
Mm-hmm.
I even go back to one of my idols, Bruce Lee. He's got the same people in all of his movies.
Yeah.
So that must mean that they have a cohesive team because they work very well together.
Mm.
I decided to replicate that. So we got my lady, Elise Hollywood Evans. We got Amy Naylor. We got Nikki. We got Gary Turner. We got Jim Meyer. We got Vert Wright. Once in a while, we'll use some other people that come in, Blaine Santos, Freeman Williams, you know, and we keep the team going.
Yeah.
We keep everybody motivated. And why change?
Yeah, why change? That's funny, like, as I said, like, probably about like 80% of those people that you had just named, I know.
Right.
You know, I've worked with those to some type of capacity and stuff like that.
Right.
So this film community up here is so crazy, man, because like how you were saying earlier, some people call it Hollywood North. I feel like it does really have the potential to reach those type of heights because we are so connected.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, it's just about mostly just everybody being on the same page of understanding that we're just trying to, one, create art, but then eventually wanted to, I mean, you're going to have to make some money off of these things.
Right.
But the art comes first, and then the team building is the most important thing.
Right.
Mm.
Got to have if you want to be successful in anything, but in this particular case, independent filmmaker, you got to have a great team because you can't do it by yourself. You know, I didn't do all of this by myself.
Mm.
You know, I was blessed with a great team.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
So,
and then so besides also doing the filmmaking, you also have a background in martial arts.
Yes, I do. I got beat up and I think I was in the fifth grade. I got beat up by a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Mylene DeJoie. Mylene, if you're watching, I'm mentioning your name.
She just did it because she had a crush on you. That's why that's why they do it. They don't understand back then when they're young. They beat you up because they like you.
She beat me up because I talked about her brother. Mm. She hit me with my own lunchbox.
Mm.
And when I got home, after my dad finished laughing at me... He was involved into the martial arts, so he taught me martial arts. And my cousin took me to some martial arts studios in New York. And then when I left New Jersey and joined the Air Force, I ran into a gentleman, Dr. Alonzo Jones, who became my primary instructor, who I ranked up under.
And okay.
So, yeah, so I've been doing martial arts since I was about, 10 years old?
Yeah.
You know? I'm gonna tell you how old I am.
No, it's all good. Yeah, we are talking. Yeah,
it's been a minute. I've been doing it for a minute. Yeah, I've been a successful competitor.
Mm.
I parlayed that into kickboxing. I used to box as well. And in kickboxing, I won 5 world titles and 5, actually, technically 6 world titles in 5 different weight divisions. And I kept going up in weight, not to test the champion.
Mm.
But because I have an affinity for ice cream, so I couldn't drop the weight, I had to move up to the next weight division, and I had a really good manager, so
yeah,
there it is.
Mm. So what do you attest to take it? Like, there's a lot of discipline that comes with martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know how to kick somebody's ass, but they teach you dope.
What
kind of, how did that discipline with martial arts help you transition into filmmaking? Because did you always want to be an actor or filmmaker?
I knew that when I was a kid, I wanted to be like my heroes that I saw on the screen. I wanted to be Fred Williamson. I wanted to be Bruce Lee. I wanted to be Jim Kelly, Ron Van. I wanted to be those guys.
Mm.
And when you're a kid, even though it's a movie, you kind of think it's kind of real life. So I wanted to be like them in real life.
Yeah.
Not knowing that would parlay into entertainment. So getting back to your question, the discipline allows me to focus on what I need to focus on. So if I'm writing a script, I'm going to write the script.
Mm.
If I'm writing a script, editing, coloring, well, from this time, I'm going to do this. From this time to that time, I'm going to do that. From this time to that time, I'm going to do that. It helps me structure and stay focused. Otherwise, I would be lost in my mix.
Yeah.
You know, I'm currently working on 4 projects right now.
Yeah.
5 projects right now. 6. I'm sorry.
Busy. God damn.
At this moment right now, 6 projects that I have to allocate time to do. Otherwise, nothing will get done.
Mm.
You know, so that's where the martial arts discipline comes in. Okay.
And these are all going to be like feature films or
2?
Different?
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 feature films, TV show, and a short film.
Okay. And one of those films is is that The Cocaine Roach?
One of them is Cocaine Roach.
All right, we're going to get into that in a little bit because I see the trailer for it, man. I see my man Marlon up in there, and I was just like, what the fuck is this, man? I was like, all right, yeah, when I texted you, I was like, is there anything you specifically want to talk about? I was like, yeah, Coca Rage. I'm like, nope, don't worry about that. It's already
got that covered.
We covered. We go get into that in a little bit of stuff. Working with your heroes, that's something that I feel is something that's like really kind of like goes under the rug, like where people don't really understand just the whole mystique of that. Because one of the things that people say a lot of times, especially in this industry, is like, you don't want to meet your heroes. You don't want to meet your idols because they're not going to be who you expect, because just watching things from like the TV screen, you think that's who they are 24/7. But I think you kind of had the opposite of that. Like, you want to be like, you work like working with like Fred Williamson. My first introduction to him was on Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like you have the opportunity to like work with your heroes and like you're like directing them. You know what I'm saying?
It's an out of body experience. I was directing this movie, Snow Black.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where Ron Van Cleef and Cammy Ferry they're going over their lines and they're speaking to each other. And I'm going over the script with them. There's a picture like on my Facebook page with all 3 of us. And I had to step back and said, oh, my God, I'm directing Ron Baker. It's like, oh my God. You know, I used to watch him, the Black Dragon, is what they call him. I used to watch him, you know, at the Adams movie theater, the Paramount movie theater, the Newark Drive-In, et cetera. So seen him on the cover of magazines, watched him fight in the UFC. I was like, I'm directing Ron Van Cleef. Oh my God. Yeah. This is real. Mm. This is real. Same thing with Lawrence Hill Jacobs is in Cocaine Roach.
Mm.
I sat back. I was like, it's Lawrence Hill Jacobs.
Like, I used to watch that guy. Like, I used to really watch this guy and, like, study him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, I watched him. One of the really, really good movies he was in was called, that's of late, it's called A Chance in the World. Mm-hmm. So I got to see him in that, and he was excellent in that film, you know, as well as, you know, the other movies, the Jacksons, and you go way back to Cooley High, and people don't realize he was in the first Death Wish movie.
Mm.
I was like, wow, this is Lawrence Hill Jacobs, and he's so cool.
Yeah.
He's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So down to earth. So,
Yeah. It's always a cool feeling, man, and just a good feeling in general where, I mean, like I said, working with these people that you like, that inspired you to be this. And then, like, when you meet them in real life, you're like, okay, they are who I thought they were.
Yeah.
It like I said, it gives you that validation, but then also that motivation to keep pursuing what it is that you're doing. Because like I said, you can just have one bad experience with somebody who you looked up to as like a hero. And then like, it will change your whole entire perspective.
It will. I haven't had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been blessed to work with some real, really great people. You know, Eric Roberts, Vernon Wells. I mean, I'm directing these guys.
Mm.
I'm like, wow. And they're really, really down to earth, really cool people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't ran into anybody. Cinda Williams.
Yeah.
She's like my sister. You know, I haven't ran into anybody who I deem eccentric, you know.
Yeah.
The original G-Man of hip hop. Had an opportunity to direct him. I'm like, wow, this is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people are so cool. It's so down to earth, you know, so it's just, when they say you don't want to meet your heroes, I kind of disagree with that, you know, because I think meeting your hero will motivate you, even if your hero turns out to whoever it is to be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you, like, I can be better than.
Yeah. Than like, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing, but I know that, like, once the tables are turned and somebody's looking at me from the perspective of, like, their hero,
right?
I know how to approach it, because I don't want nobody feeling the same way I felt and stuff like that. I mean, the only thing having a bad experience will do, like, for me, like, my mentality will just make me go harder, you know, make me try harder just to make sure that somebody else doesn't have that experience. But not everybody else is built like that, you know.
That's true. Now, Muhammad Ali never refused an autograph. And do you know why?
Mm-mm.
Because when he was a kid, Sugar Ray Robinson denied him an autograph.
Mm.
He went to Sugar Ray Robinson to get an autograph. Sugar Ray Robinson's like, go away, kid.
Yeah. Said, leave me alone.
So now, you know, they're both passed on, but that's the mentality that I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
okay, cool. Now let's get into this Cocaine Roach,
Cocaine
man.
Roach,
this
baby.
New film that you wrote this.
Yes.
How did it? Give people backstory. Like, Cocaine Roaches is basically a movie about roaches.
Roaches and cocaine.
And cocaine. That do cocaine and they just wreak havoc. Like,
So of course, we all saw Cocaine Bear, which was good. It was hilarious. And then the spinoffs come. There was Cocaine Cougar. There was Cocaine Shark. It was Meth Gator.
Mm.
It was Cocaine Crabs from Outer Space. And I think they're doing one called Cocaine Werewolf.
Yeah.
So I saw them and they were okay. You know, I don't speak bad on anybody's film. And then I talked to the distributor who distributed Cocaine Crabs from Outer Space. They sold 150,000 copies in a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, whoa. Well, I can do that, you know, but let me add a story to it. Let me, what's in these animal drug movies, what's missing, I think, a lot was missing is a story. Because if you take the gimmick away, there's no movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the cocaine cougar away from cocaine cougar, there's no movie. You take the bear away from cocaine bear, there's no movie. There's no story. So I wanted to make a story, whereas if we took the roaches away, it's still a story.
Yeah.
You know? And then how many times are you going to run into a bear?
Yeah, not too often.
Or cougar.
We black. We stay out of the woods.
That's
man.
Right.
I don't do
That's
that.
That's right. We might run into a crab at the buffet, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll run into a bear at the zoo or something like that. That's about it, yeah.
Now, how many times are you going to see a roach?
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to use something that everybody's familiar with. Everybody has seen at least once and have dealt with, especially in the black community. So, because none of these movies have anything to do with the black community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make something specifically a little more urban, a little more fun, and compelling story.
Mm.
So that's how Cocaine Roach came about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you give us a little, you don't got to give us a whole storyline, unless you want to, but just like how you said, there's a story behind it. Can you give us a little backstory to what the story is?
So the backstory to the story, well, there's like three different stories.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's the drug story where a cross-dressing kingpin gives two of her clients a bag of coke to make some money to go to the safe house and wait for the money man.
Mm.
So that's the basics, you know, story. And the safe house is, of course, filled with drug-crazed roaches.
Yeah.
Then you have the story of the character Tanisha and her daughter. How she kind of leaves her daughter so she can go out and party and have fun with the guys, et cetera, so forth. Then you have the story of Tanisha and her current boyfriend, Gary L. Turner, who killed that role.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the story of Tanisha and her ex-boyfriend, Marlon.
Okay,
Who plays Omar, who happens to be the drug lord's enforcer and bodyguard.
Yeah.
So you put all four of those guys in a room together. Oh, and we can't forget Alvin. His character's name is, I can't remember Alvin's character's name. Jamal.
Okay.
So he's kind of like just in for the ride. So you put Jamal, Ski, Omar, and Tanisha in a room together, and they can't get out until the money man comes.
Yeah.
With 4 kilos of coke and cocaine-filled roaches. What's going to happen?
The roaches going to start eating people?
You got to see it.
We got to see it, man. I'm looking forward to that one. That one, I know I missed bad as hell. I had work, but I will call it to work to watch fucking Cocaine Roach. That reminds me of like, growing up watching a lot of the sci-fi original movies.
Right.
You know, there was something about them to where like that independent filmmaking type of aspect or like, you know, like those grindhouse movies where they just, they not say it cheesy, but they're just, you could tell they're films that are just made from the heart.
Right.
You know?
And this isn't cheesy.
Mm.
I mean, it's low budget. It's definitely low budget. We said we got Lawrence Hilton Jacobs in it. We got Todd Cinafante. Todd, it was Jean-Claude Van Damme stunt double.
Mm.
I wish I had my phone with me. I would pull up. We got two critic reviews so far.
Yeah.
On a unfinished movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they love it.
Yeah.
They love it. Mm-hmm. They absolutely love it. I'm going to send you those critic reviews so you can read those.
Yeah, because I think that's what people are yearning for right now, man. Like, just something that they could just sit back, watch it, be like, oh, this is, like, we're watching a movie. You know, nothing that they take, like, we're getting, like, that popcorn and just, nothing too extravagant, nothing too, but something we could.
They're going to love it. Elise Hollywood Evans plays two roles.
Mm.
So she plays Tanisha and she plays Diva Big Deal. Now, we had a private screening yesterday for a mutual friend of ours just to test it outside of me, because, you know, I've watched it 1,000 times, outside of her and outside of people who are in that real tight circle, because we're keeping a lid on the movie. And he loved it. He laughed And then he was real quiet during the serious parts. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a fun roller coaster ride. It's not a slow movie.
Mm-hmm.
The introduction leads up to everything.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of help. We had help from the Black Repertory Theater in Berkeley, Berkeley Black Rep, helped us out a lot. I'm just very thankful that we got it off, and it's great, man. Every time I look at it, it gets better and better and better.
Yeah. And then what is it like when you, because of course, like as filmmakers, we look at our own art like that's our baby, like we treat it like our baby, like we love it. But what is it like when you see, like how you say, like you showed it to your mutual friend, or like with Mad as Hell, you know, saying, you said it won like, what, 34 awards and stuff like that. What is it like? What's that feeling like for you when other people look at your work and they have that same appreciation for it that you do, that validation?
That lets me know that I'm on the right path, but it also lets me know that I can do better.
Mm.
You know, our last movie, Mad as Hell, was really good. I was very proud of it. But now we got Cocaine Roach and I'm like, it's on another level.
Yeah.
We're doing a vampire movie also called The Thirst.
The Thirst, yeah.
Which is on another level. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have to keep progressing. You know, we have to keep stepping up. I never want to in this business plateau.
Yeah.
Even if we take a dip, even if I make a bad movie, I'll learn from it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to make the same movie every time. Then you're like, for lack of a better word, you're like a Steven Seagal movie. He just cranks out these movies.
He's just the same guy.
Same guy in every movie.
He's like, I just want the same lines from this movie, that movie.
Same character. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm dipping into this horror thing. I have an idea in my head, and we're working with my guy, Timothy Beale, to get the rights to Blackenstein. So that we can do our spin on Blackenstein. I did you see Blackenstein?
Mm-mm.
Don't.
No? Okay. Cool. I'll take that one off the bucket. I'll wait for you to remake
it. So yeah, we're gonna hopefully remake it and make it with a, and I'm not saying don't see it because it's a horrible movie.
Mm.
You might laugh at it.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
In today's, because that was made way back in the 70s. So in today's standard, it really wouldn't be on par, wouldn't really cut the mustard. So I would like to remake it and give it a story, a real story. And I have an idea on how to do that.
Okay. Do you, with having such an extensive resume now with films that you produce, having your own production studio, do you feel like there's pressure to outdo the last film you did? Or is it, I just want to make this film the best film it could be, this next film?
I want to make each film the best film it can be. Now, when we were doing Cocaine Roach, Elise Hollywood Evans would be over my shoulder and she would say, is that the best you can do for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, because the technology has been made. Well, yes, it has. Somebody has a technology and somebody's done this and somebody's done that. And it's just a computer program. And though it was a little aggravating.
Yeah.
I was like, you have to step outside of yourself and be like, she's right. We can do better. Like when I first did the roaches, they looked absolutely horrible. They were like this big and just brown, and you can do better, Robert. You can do better.
Yeah.
And so I tried to make it the best we could be. And when this is over, I'll give you a glimpse of it so you can see. And they look like real roaches.
Yeah.
So every project I can do I want it to be better than the last project I did? Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. But that's not my mindset. My mindset is to make this project right here the best it can be. And if it's better than the last project, great. If it's not, great. You know, but this one right here has got to be more than 100% for what I give it to.
Yeah. And so you mentioned Elise Hollywood Evans a couple of times. What is the like with having such a big production team, having to be in charge of so many people and so many people dependent on you? What's it like having like a partner there, like that's just like your rock, that you that person that you can now lean on? Because everybody looks at you as the leader, but now you have somebody who you just like. She understands not only the entertainment business; she doesn't understand just Robert the filmmaker, but Robert the person.
Well, she checks me. Mm. You know, when I fall short on things because I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. I forget things. Things I don't do, things I don't push myself to do because sometimes I fall into a cycle of that's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but she pushes me.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you can do better. Hey, what does this look like? Hey, what is your audience going to think of this scene? What is your audience going to think of these words?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it helps me be very conscious, very, very conscious, you know, and there are other people. Amy Naylor is she's like our set production person. So she is on the script. Robert, you forgot this scene. You forgot that. Don't forget this. You know, I'm like, what scene are we on? And I just turn to her and she knows we're on scene 34.
Mm.
You know, she just knows.
Yeah.
She knows. So she's a big help. You know, Gary Turner, he's my whatever I need him to be. So when we're on set, Gary and I'll direct and Gary will be pull me to the side and say, hey, Rob, what if you did the scene like this? That's a pretty good idea, Gary. Let's do it like that and let's see how it turns out.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a collective effort. I wouldn't say I'm the leader. I would say I'm the spearhead, but not necessarily the leader because we all have sight and insight into what we do because we've done it long enough to make a great film.
Yeah.
You know, it just so happens that I'm the director.
Mm.
You
know? Yeah.
Could have been any one of us.
Mm. So is that also your approach to, like I say, just putting together your production team? It's like you said, it's a lot of familiar people, a lot of familiar parts.
Mm.
That also goes into them, like you being able to trust their input.
Right.
And then vice versa, them being able to trust you as the director.
Right, right. Because if there's something that they say and I don't think it's going to work, I'm going to tell them, hey, that's not going to work.
Mm.
And I'll tell them why it's not going to work. And then they won't get offended.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't get offended at when they tell me, hey, Rob, I don't think that's going to work. I don't get offended because we're trying to make a product. It's not about the ego. Mm. It's about the product.
Yeah.
You know, so we all vibe off each other with that. You know, of course, I have a vision the way I would like something to look. But in somebody else's eyes, it might look a little better if we did it like this.
Mm.
Oh, I got to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not making the movie for me. I'm making a movie for the audience, you know, the populace.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to take everybody's opinion.
Nice, nice. And like I said, those being on those types of film sets, especially being independent filmmakers, I mean, you should almost call it, it's almost the opposite of being independent, man. It's like codependent. You got to be. This is a codependent film. Like, just like this person is trusting me, I'm trusting this person. I'm hoping this person shows up. I'm hoping this actor knows their lines. I'm hoping this light person actually knows how to operate lights.
It's like my DP. We did this music video in LA for a rapper, Q Ali Bey. It's got, over, 200,000 views on YouTube or whatever. And had Gary and I had my guy, Vert Wright, his DPs.
Mm.
And so we worked long enough together. And they were like, what do you think of this shot? I don't want to see it. I trust you.
Yeah.
I asked you what I wanted. Just get it.
Yeah.
You know, don't show me every shot unless I ask to see the shot. I trust you. Mm. Let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that is time that I could be spending doing something else to move the set forward.
Yeah.
You know, that's just me. That's the way I work.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are, you got to see the shot after every shot to make sure you like it. Of course I like it.
Mm.
You know, I trust you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's definitely the camaraderie of once you build up your team, people you trust. Because I'm a similar situation. Like I said, I produce my own comedy shows. Eventually, you know, take what I learned from producing a comedy show into, you know, producing my own films and things of that nature. But talked to a comedian at my show last time, and he was just all like, you know, because we got to, from a comedian standpoint, we got to look at the audience and, you know, judge from what the audience looks like, what jokes we might feel are going to be the best. And, you know, one of the comedians, he just asked me, he's like, hey, man, so what could I do? Right? Like, what kind of jokes could I tell? I was like, bro, like, just do you.
Right.
Like, I'm like, you are way past the point of asking me, you know, what type of jokes to say, because like you've grown as a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched you grow as a comedian. Like I put you on the show because I trust you as a comedian, bro. Mm-hmm. Just go out there, do you, and have a blast.
Right.
And he killed it.
Right.
Absolutely killed it. So right. Just, I feel like it takes a little while to get there because like everybody treats, you know, everybody has art. Everybody has their own vision. But once you get in sync with that person, it's mm-hmm. just, it's like, bro, just do you, man.
You got to get past people's, or you don't have to, but people have to get past the insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you, and it's not a level of arrogance. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for confidence.
Yeah.
So once you get past the insecurity and you become confident in what you do, then it's all gravy from there. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. How, as an artist or filmmaker in general, do we, because it's a thin line between the confidence and ego, especially in this business, because people's personalities are so, so fragile at times, mm-hmm. man. How do we kind of like instill that confidence, but then understand, but like take away like the ego part of it?
Well, for me, I worship God mm-hmm. at the end of the day. I know that I'm not going to be here forever. Mm-hmm. And I know that I have to answer for what I do. So for me to say, oh, I'm a better actor than you, that's a little arrogant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe
I said that and hurt your feelings, right? But if I do that and hurt your feelings, one day I'm going to have to answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing would be, hey, let's help you move to the next level.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what works for anybody else, the difference between confidence and arrogance, I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. I've seen a lot of arrogance in this business, a lot of cockiness. And I think you need a little bit of that to stay on top of your game.
Oh, yeah.
But it shouldn't be.
Maybe, it shouldn't spill over to the next. It's something that you just keep it inside yourself. It's something that it shouldn't spill over that you end up taking out on the next person.
Yeah, it shouldn't spill outside of yourself.
Mm.
It really shouldn't. You know, it's like when I was in the ring, I had the confidence to know that I'm going to beat this guy in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I had the confidence to know that. It wasn't arrogance. You know, I wasn't, you know, sticking my tongue out and shaking my hips and, you know, playing mind game. Well, I did play mind games, but.
Yeah, no, it's a mental game. It's a mental game. More than a physical fight, it's a mental
game.
Yeah.
It's a mental game of chess,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's the same thing in this business. You got to leave your ego at the door.
Mm.
You know, if you want to make a great product, leave your ego at the door.
Because
if I come into the set all arrogant, well, I'm going to suck all the energy out of
you. Yeah.
And I'm going to, you know, I'm a director. I'm going to make you do this take 20 times.
Mm.
Let's get two more for safety. Everybody's going to get you all the energy.
It's draining. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the most important things, like being on a film set. I say number one is the food.
Right.
and then number two is just, the personalities. People will work hard if there's good food
right.
and there's good people, if they're around good people, good energy. But once that energy is sucked out the room, man, it just, now be like, cause we are working. This is a job, you know, everybody has their own things that they have to do, their own responsibilities. But the second you walk in and like treat it like it's a job, it just sucks the energy out of the freaking room.
It does. It does. And the good food is real important. I usually have my daughter cater our film sets. So when Lawrence Hilton Jacobs was here, we had like three different kinds of chicken.
Mm.
We had mac and cheese, we had a salad, we had some banana pudding. Oh man, we laid it out. And we took a lunch break and I didn't want to go back.
No, I was about to go to sleep. I'm about to catch the itis just listening. I'm like, golly. And see, those are the type of films, because those just show that you care about the people, man.
Yeah.
You care about the filmmakers.
You got to, because you want them to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You want
mm-hmm.
them to come back. I imagine if I got on set and treated Lawrence Hilton Jacobs like trash.
Yeah.
After all of his experience and I went in there and treated him like trash. Mm-hmm. You know what he's going to do? He's never going to work with me again. And then he's going to tell all of his friends never to work with me again.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
You can't do that.
And like I said, it's a small world. It is. It's the community is small, man. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I mean, I think I just friended you on Facebook, but then you look at our Facebook friends, we probably got over 100 mutual friends. Yeah, I'm all like, this is a small world, man. Small world. Yeah. So before we do like wrap up the episode, one thing I always do is call like the Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
Which is basically like your top four. And I'm like, we say like your top four, you know, action actors, you know.
Top four actors.
Yeah. And there's probably people that you've already named, but you know, just people who inspired you, motivated you, that you watched on the TV screen or in the magazines that said, oh yeah, I could do this.
Bruce Lee, Fred Williamson, Jim Kelly, Ron Van Cleef.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Yeah.
Top four.
Yeah.
There's and then, Mount Rushmore.
And you know what was dope about that? Like, the reason why I love doing the Mount Rushmore and stuff like that, because it always comes back to some part previously in this episode and stuff like that. Like, all those people that you named, for the most part, were all, like, literally people, like, mentors.
Right.
Mentors in your life. People who, like I said, helped shape who you are, not from just, like, the visual standpoint, like, from you visualizing, oh, I could be that. But there are people who, like, probably in your phone book, people who put their, you know, arm around your shoulder, like, Robert, this is how you got to do this, bro.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that's the thing, because eventually you're going to get to the point to where, let's say 10 years from now, 15 years from now, somebody might be watching this podcast. They'd be like, hey, man, I'm going to copy that and I'm going to do a Mount Rushmore. And then that person is going to interview somebody and be like, who's your Mount Rushmore? They're going to be like, oh, my Rushmore is fucking, it's Robert. You know, it's this person, that person, you know what I'm saying? Because it everything comes full circle in this business.
It does.
Everything comes full circle in this business.
It does. It really, really does. So you have to be conscious of how you act,
mm-hmm.
what you say, what you do,
mm-hmm.
because this is a small business.
Yeah.
It's a real small business. And you want to work with open arms with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
No tension on the set.
Mm-hmm.
No disparaging words. It's all about love, man.
Yep. Yep. That's what it's all about, man. We just out here just trying to make movies, man. We trying to turn our dreams into plans and our plans into reality.
That's right.
So that's the goal. So yeah, where could people find you at?
You can find me on Facebook at Robert.Parham,
mm-hmm.
P-A-R-H-A-M. You can find me on Instagram at The Real Robert Parham. And you can find me on TikTok at Kickboxin5, KickBxn5.
Okay, sure. And now if they want to go back and see your movies, where could they see?
My movies are on Plex, Vudu, Hoopla. What is that?
Tubi
and Peacock.
Okay.
So cool. You can just type in my name and the movies will come up.
Okay. Awesome, man. Awesome, man. Well, yeah, I'm going to bring you back and we could talk about that whole, the second part to like the production part. Well, actually, I consider the third part, which is there's pre-production, production, then post-production, which is actually like getting your movie, you know, out there and onto these streaming platforms. I feel like that's just a whole another conversation in itself, because that's where really like the networking and, you know, who you know and really knowing the business side of things.
It's who you know, it's who knows you.
Mm-hmm.
You can know anybody, but if they don't know you, you're not moving forward.
Mm. Powerful. All right, man. So yeah, my name is Big Buddy Romig. I've been the host. You can follow me at Yeah Buddy ENT or at Funny Business on all social media platforms. And if you're listening, if you're watching, it's just right there down there for y'all. And then, like I said, this is the Yeah Buddy podcast. It has been brought to you by the Comedy Cash Cow Competition, which goes down May 25th, Vacaville, California. Tickets are available right now. You can see 25 comedians compete and battle it out for their chance to win $1,000 grand prize and the chance to star in their own short film, which we will then take and send out to like a whole bunch of film festivals and stuff like that. So we're, you know, breaking comedians into the film industry. We're going to have a whole bunch of industry people there, like agents, managers, media personalities, people from iHeartRadio, film commissioners, film distributors. I just found that out today. We're going to have some film distributors out there too as well. So it's not only an opportunity for like comedians, I was like, say actors and filmmakers like that. You come network and meet people. You might even find a comedian for your next show, you got me now. You got me now. I'm trying to have those three different types of chicken. My name's been Buddy Romig, y'all. This has been another episode of the Yeah Buddy podcast. Robert, man, thank you for being a guest.
Thanks, bro. Man. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we out, man. I'll catch y'all on the next episode. You catch us streaming everywhere on from YouTube, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts at, man. We there. We everywhere like air. All righty, man. I'll catch y'all later.